As leaders, we want things to be orderly. Clear goals, clear rules, clear path forward. No surprises. Unfortunately, that's not how the world works. Instead, we're surrounded by chaos.
I was a highly in control leader of an entrepreneurial venture, and I realized that chaos was kind of taking over my life.
That's Glenda O. Young, founder and executive director of the Human Systems Dynamics Institute. Glenda is a student of history, science, and the philosophy of chaos. She's also a longtime entrepreneur and business owner herself, so she deeply understands what happens when complex people and complex systems collide. In her work at the Human Systems Dynamics Institute, Glenda and her team help organizations around the world cut through chaos. She helps them focus on what's essential in the current moment and work together to tackle complicated problems.
When things are changing quickly, you're working in a very complex environment, answers don't last very long. An answer can be true in one place and one time, but not very useful someplace else. But what you can carry as a leader are good questions.
I'm Meryl McDonald, and my passion's helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open ourselves up to amazing possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their careers and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. Yeah, so I'm here today with Dr. Glenda O. Young, who's the founding executive director of the Human Systems Dynamics Institute. Wow, Glenda, that's quite a mouthful, actually, and a big concept. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do?
Indeed. So in the late 1980s, I was a highly in-control leader of an entrepreneurial venture, and I realized that chaos was kind of taking over my life, and I wanted to get good at it. I realized I couldn't avoid it as a business leader, and that I'd better build up some capacity for dealing with it. And so at that point, I started studying complexity theory and chaos theory and broader field of nonlinear dynamics to try to see what I could learn about a discipline that would work in uncertainty. And so that's what human systems dynamics is. It's a collection of concepts and tools and approaches that give people a way to feel discipline and intentional, even when they don't predict and control. So that's human systems dynamics. We draw from the science and apply to the real world.
And how, it's so interesting that you really went the science route. Did you have a science background, or what led you to that?
Well, my background is in history and philosophy of science. And I had never really liked science very much as I was growing up because I thought it was boring. If there was an answer in the back of the book that somebody else had already found, I wasn't so interested in that. And so I went to St. John's College, which is a great books program. And so we read history and philosophy of science from the ancients. And I began to realize that science was not in the back of the book, but that it was an emerging practice of understanding and action. And that's the way I think of leadership, in the same way that it is, the answers are not in the back of the book. We used to think they were, but they weren't really. But that it is an ongoing process of learning and action, engaging with the real world, seeing what works and taking action in it. And so it just seems to me that that fundamental practice of science was the best practice for leadership. And so that's the pathway that I took. One of the things that we know for sure about complex systems is that each situation is unique, that there are characteristics and dynamics and opportunities in each place and time that are never repeated. It's like Heraclitus and his foot in a stream. You can't stick your foot in the same stream twice. And so every solution in a complex system has to be what we call re-innovated. that a solution from one place can't be carried and plunked into another place. It simply doesn't fit. You can take lessons from earlier success, but those lessons have to be reinterpreted and reapplied in the new place where you land. So learning from other situations is incredibly important. Copying other situations is sure failure.
So, Glenda, you've talked about some of the competencies that you really see as critical for leaders in the future. How would you shift how we're currently training leaders to get them to that point?
Well, it's funny that you asked that question. We got a contact from a fellow in the Indies a couple of weeks ago who was a CEO and is on many corporate boards and has a cluster of friends who are close to retirement, all on corporate boards. And he said to us, you know, our kids are finishing business school. They're getting their MBAs, and they don't know any of the things they need to know to work in leadership. And he had been online to see what is it that he knew that his children and other people's children didn't know. And he landed on our website, Human Systems Dynamics, and he realized that what they aren't learning is how to engage with what's real. That they're being able to engage through their MBA work on what should be, what the world should be like, what it might be like, what it could be like, and a kind of expectation about things being such a way. But he said, as real leaders, they find themselves seldom working with what really should be perfect, and much more often working with what is and finding a way to respond to and to use the power and possibility of what currently exists as opposed to pining away for something that might be perfect. And so we're going to be doing a program for them and their children and together to talk about how do you live in a real world as opposed to trying to create one that's impossible.
So, Glenda, as a leader is attempting to focus on what's most essential, how would I think about that? What's the process I go about to figure out what is essential?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it goes to one of our basic assumptions in a complex system. And that is that in any complex system, especially in roles of leadership, you need to be able to control and command, that you need to be able to do that as a leader. You also need to be able to work in total uncertainty and respond to whatever happens, and that's a continuum. You need skills at both of those extremes. And then you need to be able to look at what's happening and decide what is most fit for function in that time. Is this a place and a time where control is going to serve our performance, or is this a time when freedom and openness is going to serve our performance? And then, as a leader, you have to be able to move quickly and easily with agility on that continuum from control to less control.
And do you find that that's an innate sense of a leader, or can that be taught?
That can be taught. That's our work, is teaching people how to do that.
What are some of the attributes that you find in leaders who do that really well?
Well, it's very interesting that you asked that question. We're in the process of working on and thinking about ways to define and test and give feedback on competencies for thriving in complexity. And so that's current research that we're working on. Very exciting. One of the things that we're finding is that this ability to hold a paradox without feeling the need to solve it is key. To be able to recognize, I need to be in control and I need to be open, and I need to hold both of those at the same time. I need to pay attention to individuals and I need to pay attention to the whole, and I need to do those at the same time. I need to talk about tradition and innovation, and I need to hold those at the same time. I need to talk about quality and sustainability at the same time. This is so those to be able to hold a paradox and to work at both extremes and in the middle seems to be the major competency for working in these systems.
Yeah, that's what we've found in our work as well. And some of this even goes way back to Peter Senge, right, with the idea of holding the vision for the future and current reality at the same time.
Exactly.
So we have a lot of things we have to hold at the same time.
Yeah, we do indeed.
When you see leaders who are really good at releasing with their teams, you know, or letting go, what does that look like?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the most common characteristic I see is that they ask questions. They're in inquiry. They are curious and learning about what's happening. We find that inquiry is such a key tool in complex systems. And it's easier to talk about inquiry than it is to do it, unfortunately. And so we have four simple rules that we use to help us stay in inquiry and to help our clients stay in inquiry. And they are, first one is, turn judgment into curiosity. So when you are feeling a judgment coming up, often a judgment is a barrier to being able to move forward. So how can you convert that into a useful, meaningful question? So that's the first rule, judgment into curiosity. The second rule is turn conflict into shared exploration. Now, this works particularly well with the cross-sector, cross-silo communication because different silos have different goals. And if they come into contact with each other, they're bound to be in conflict. It's just not reasonable for them not to be in conflict. But if they can turn that conflict into shared exploration, then they can move it forward into something new. So that's the second rule. The third rule, and this one is the hardest for me, is turn defensiveness into self-reflection. So, and this is particularly hard for leaders, right? And in times of change, because when things are changing and you're asked to be different than you were before, the automatic reaction is to say, no, I was doing the right thing. Wasn't I doing the right thing? And to defend an old stance. But if you can take that moment to become self-reflective, to think about what was and what is and what might be and how you can stretch yourself into those spaces, then that will prepare you for the next stage. And the fourth rule is to turn assumptions into questions. So when I think I know for sure, that's the very time I need to be wondering. So those are the three rules. Judgment into curiosity, conflict into shared exploration, defensiveness into self-reflection, and assumptions into questions. And the leaders that we find who are able to work most effectively, both in finite and infinite games, are ones who have that inquiry stance and carry it with them all the time. Now, they still have to make judgments. They still have to deal with conflict. They still have to hold their own defensiveness and stance. And they also need to make assumptions. If they don't, then they're helplessly lost. But being able to decide when and how to be open and when and how to be certain is that gift of future leadership, we believe. And that, for us, is the letting go, is to stand in inquiry.
What are you seeing as these agile teams are working through organizations? How do they actually create a movement?
One of the ways that we help people do that, one of the fundamental distinctions that we hold, is what we call finite games and infinite games. So a finite game is like football. It has a beginning and an end and a score and a referee. You know who's on which side. And there's some people who can observe and others who are on the stands. And so there's some things that are finite games. Somebody wins and somebody loses, and the point is to win. And then the other extreme are challenges that we have that persist over time, that don't really have a beginning point or an ending point. There are hundreds of ways to measure success. Roles keep shifting, rules keep shifting. Judgments have to be constructed in dialogue over time. Nobody gets to sit on the sidelines. Everybody plays. And the purpose of those games is to keep playing. And so we believe that the main challenges for leadership today and tomorrow lie in that infinite game space. When you think about corporate social responsibility, it existed before, it exists after. There are many ways to measure its success. Everyone is involved. It's full of wicked problems. Dealing with climate change, dealing with globalized economies, dealing with political and social transformation, dealing with demographic and workforce shifts, dealing with ethics and corruption, that all of those are issues that are on the infinite game side of the continuum. And this is one of the things that I think for-profits can learn from not-for-profits. For-profits have pretty much thrived on the finite game end of the continuum. It's about profit. We're a corporation. We know who's in and who's out. We know what our competition looks like. We measure performance with profit. So establishing success on that finite end of the continuum, for-profit companies are great at that. And for-profit leadership has wonderful ways to keep that world moving. But in the 21st century, more and more, corporations are needing to work in that more infinite game space. And not-for-profits have always worked in an infinite space. And government, lots of stakeholders, lots of possibilities, lots of things that are interdependent that they don't really control, working on massive issues like poverty and peace that began long ago and will continue long after we're done. And so the fact that nonprofits and nonprofit leadership has built a capacity for working in the infinite game space, those lessons will be really useful ones for for-profit leaders. In the same way that the lessons of winning the finite game really need to be absorbed by the nonprofit sector in terms of accountability and representation and clarity of vision and focus of energy, measurement, evaluation. And so we're seeing in all of our clients a kind of merger of the nonprofit ability to deal with open, high dimension and nonlinear challenges of infinite games and the very finite, specific, focused, winnable games. And that as those two merge, all leaders need to build a different kind of capacity.
And how do they actually create a movement?
Oh, lovely question. Lovely question. When we say system in human systems dynamics, we mean a complex adaptive system. And that is that there are agents, individual parts and pieces that interact with each other and create patterns that cover the system as a whole. So you can think of a team as the individual agents, and they interact and create a high-performing team, or a culture comes to be that way, or an engaged workforce. So that's when we say system, that's what we mean. So that depends on three things. And if you think about a movement as being a pattern that is generated in a system, that the movement is a pattern that emerges across the system, then the question is, who are the agents? How do they get connected? And what do they have to share with each other? Really, we don't have a single purpose in our movement.
Tell me more about that.
The movement depends on each person fulfilling their purpose in the place where they are. And that purpose can be quite different. So we have a person who's looking at a change process in Amnesty International. We have someone else who's trying to get rid of poverty in Northern England. We have someone else who teaches kindergarten kids. We have another person who's writing educational policy, another one who's working on HIV/AIDS eradication in South Africa. Each of them has a very different purpose based on their own context. So our coming together as a movement isn't about expecting them all to go in the same direction or toward the same purpose. It's not an endpoint. An endpoint belongs to a finite game where there's somebody's going to win. We set the conditions for an infinite game that says we have six simple rules that each person in the system follows. And those simple rules mean that they are engaging with each other and with their environments in a way that creates a coherent, consistent pattern that we're looking for. So they have purposes, but we as a movement don't have a single purpose. And I can tell you what our rules are, and that will give you a sense of the pattern that we're trying to create. So our movement is trying to create a pattern by each individual person following the same simple rules. And they are these. Teach and learn in every interaction. So think of all those different people in all those different places. They are teaching and learning in every interaction. The second rule is give and get value for value. So don't try to exploit somebody else, but be sure you're not exploited. Give and get value for value. The third rule is search for the true and the useful. So there are a lot of academics and theoreticians and abstractions that are true, but they're not very useful.
Right.
And then there are other things that may be useful in the moment, but if they're not true, they're not going to be useful long term.
Right.
And so we focus in on things that are both true and useful. The fourth rule is attend to the whole, the part, and the greater whole. So be sure that you're paying attention to, in any complex system, individuals and small groups and the system as a whole, because they're feeding into each other up and down. Engage in joyful practice. That's my favorite one. And share your HSD story so that others can see and understand where you are working and thinking. So each of these various agents in our network are using those rules in their own context to re-innovate what it means to be an HSD professional wherever they are and whatever they're doing. And so it's our simple rules that move us forward as a movement.
What do you think leaders most need to let go of?
That's a good question. This is going to sound really weird, but their own expertise. And I think there are three reasons for that. One is that the expertise that brought a leader into the place where they are, whether it was technical expertise or expertise in business as it used to be, or expertise in another place and time, that those may very well not be relevant today. And unless you're willing to let go, you're not going to discover that it's not relevant. You're going to keep fighting the old war as you go into the new one. So to let go of your own expertise in the moment.
I love that. And it reminds me of Edie Wiener, who, the futurist, who talks about the defrocking of the professions, that now there's so much knowledge out there that being an expert doesn't really count anymore.
Exactly.
Because you can find knowledge so quickly.
Yeah.
And when I talk to college students, I always tell them they're so worried about what they don't know or the experience they don't have. And I have 40 years of experience, that much of which doesn't count anymore.
That's right. Well,
so don't worry about it.
And not only does it not count, but it keeps your feet like in shackles.
Because
that expertise holds you.
Yeah.
So that is really, I think, an important piece. The second thing about letting go of your expertise is that then you can come into inquiry. You can step out of defensiveness. You can step out of your assumptions. You can step out of your judgments. And it allows you, it opens you up to inquiry.
I'm inspired by how Glenda's personal journey through chaos led to her life's calling to help others navigate uncertainty. I want to close this episode by reiterating Glenda's four simple rules, which she calls inquiry mode. I think these are so powerful for all leaders to reflect on as a way to let go and lead. First, turn judgment into curiosity. When you feel judgment coming on, how can you convert that judgment into meaningful questions? Second, turn conflict into shared exploration. If you can move from conflict into shared exploration, you can journey forward together into something new. Third, turn defensiveness into self-reflection. When you feel the need to defend yourself, reflect and think about what is, what might be, and how you could stretch yourself into new spaces. And lastly, turn assumptions into questions. At the moment you think you are certain, that's the time to keep asking more. In the midst of chaos, pressure, and problem solving, Glenda's framework is a wonderful way to lead yourself and others to the best possible outcome in a way that's collaborative and productive. Thanks so much to Glenda for being with us. And don't forget to subscribe to receive future episodes of Let Go and Lead Automatically. We'll see you next time.